shoot me for appreciating the moment, but I was like, here I am at the Super Bowl singing for a team and in front of, you know, the world, and remembering what it was like to be that young, and look where I've made it now. And then it's like, oh, and that night I knew. I was like, I just made myself a Trivial Pursuit question. In 2011, what female singer, you know, flubbed the lyric? It's just insane.
Hi, everybody. My name is Shauna, and this is the American English Podcast. My goal here is to teach you the English spoken in the United States through common expressions, pronunciation tips, and interesting cultural snippets or stories. I hope to keep this fun, useful, and interesting. Let's do it. Hi, everybody. How's it going? In that introduction, you heard Christina Aguilera on Ellen, talking about what it was like to sing the lyrics of the national anthem incorrectly at Super Bowl 45. If you haven't seen the footage, instead of saying, "or the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming," she said, "what so proudly we watched at the twilight's last gleaming." The song was performed live in front of about 103,000 people and broadcasted to over 111 million viewers on TV. So that's what we might classify as an epic fail. The crazy thing, though, is that she's not alone in screwing up the national anthem publicly. It's actually fairly common. Many singers have struggled to hit the right notes, for example, Carl Lewis and Roseanne, to name a few. Some singers tried to alter the original song in a way that actually made the audience cringe, like Fergie in 2018. You can see the professional NBA players in the background trying to hold it together while their teammates start laughing. It's pretty horrible, and I feel pretty bad for Fergie in that situation. Then there's singers like Christina that momentarily forgot the lyrics and kept going with the song. Michael Bolton, however, started reading the lyrics off a piece of paper in his hand when he forgot, publicly, on TV. Then there's the famous Rachel Platten, who in 2018 forgot the words right at the very beginning of the song and had to ask the audience for help. In general, in my opinion, performances of this song are really hit or miss. Some are very good, and some are very, very bad. So what's the deal? Why do so many professional singers screw up the Star Spangled Banner? After all, we only sing the first verse, and it's pretty short. First of all, the obvious reason is probably nerves. The crowds are big and they forget the lines because of that. Secondly, the range. There is a range of 12 notes in the Star Spangled Banner. According to Matt Farnsworth, a vocal coach, if you start singing the song in your normal range, you likely won't be able to hit some of those high notes. Thirdly, the words are challenging in the song, and the structure is very confusing, even for native speakers. In order to understand the lyrics, it actually really helps to understand the vocabulary, then the context of the song, so where it was written, and oddly enough, the punctuation. So that's exactly what I'm going to do in the fun fact for today's episode. I'll explain the national anthem, both the context and the vocabulary and the meaning. But before we do that, let's go through a joke, an expression, and some pronunciation exercises. Let's start with that joke. Why do doctors hit patients on the knees to test their reflexes? Any ideas? Because they get a kick out of it. Oh, I love it. Of course, as a reflex, someone's knee or their leg will kick if hit in the right place. But to get a kick out of something as an expression means to find something fun or entertaining. So let's hear that joke one more time. Why do doctors hit patients on the knees to test their reflexes? They get a kick out of it, right? So the doctors find it fun and they also literally get that kick from the leg moving. All right, so today we'll be working with the expression hit or miss. You might also hear hit and miss. That's also very common. Both are perfectly fine. Let's go through the individual words first. Hit is a verb or a noun. It's when someone's hand or another object quickly or forcefully strikes another surface. In the game of baseball, a batter hits the ball. Also, particularly for this expression, it's an instance of striking or coming in contact with a target that we are aiming for, right? So in your head, you should think of it more of like a success, something that works. Or as a conjunction used to connect two different alternatives. For example, would you prefer to live by the beach or in the mountains? Miss is a verb, or here we're talking about a noun, and it means to fail to hit, reach, or come in contact with a target. When we say something is hit or miss, it means it's either great or completely horrible. It's either successful or very unsuccessful. You either get something or you don't, right? There's no in between. It can also mean unpredictable, right? Because you don't know whether it's going to be good or bad, or if it's going to work or if it's not going to work. The example I gave at the very beginning was about the national anthem. And this is a personal opinion, so please feel free to judge if you'd like. But I feel like performances of the national anthem are hit or miss. Some people sing it really, really well, while others perform it horribly, in my opinion. I rarely hear the national anthem and think, that was okay. It's usually really great or really bad, in my opinion. It's hit or miss. Let me give you a few more examples to make more sense of this expression. Example number one. Last year, a friend of mine started watching a TV series called New Girl. I'm sure some of you have heard of it. Anyway, she told me that she really liked the first and second seasons, but when they got to the third season, she felt like it was hit or miss. She said sometimes she watched episodes and laughed really hard, whereas other times she was confused and thought they were trying too hard to make it funny. So some episodes were great and some episodes were bad. It was hit or miss. Example number two. In my area of California, there are a lot of Mexicans and really wonderful Mexican restaurants. Honestly, every Mexican restaurant I've been to in the area has been good. When it comes to other types of ethnic cuisine, though, it's really hit or miss. Some places are phenomenal and other places are really bad. Of course, you can also use hit or miss with one specific restaurant. For example, if you go to one place that is unpredictable, you don't know if you will get good food or bad food because they are not reliable, then you could say it's a hit or miss restaurant or the restaurant is hit or miss. Example number three. A friend of mine went to Norway a few years ago to see the Northern Lights, right? The Aurora Borealis, and was really disappointed because he couldn't see them. It was a cloudy day. He told me afterwards that it's hit or miss. It's unpredictable. Sometimes you see them, sometimes you don't. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's nothing. Speaking of which, it's not necessarily related, but it's very common to use hit or miss with weather. When it could be great or it could be bad, it's unpredictable. It's hit or miss. So I felt like weather in Sao Paulo was hit or miss. Some days I'd wake up wearing shorts and a tank top and it would be sunny all day. And other days I would leave the house in my flip-flops and shorts and would come home soaking wet just because they have spontaneous rain showers. It's hit or miss. Let's do some pronunciation exercises. We'll start with the sentence, careful, it's hit or miss. Repeat after me, careful. Careful, it's hit. Careful, it's hit or miss. Careful, it's hit or miss. And the conjugation, repeat after me. I said it was hit or miss. You said it was hit or miss. She said it was hit or miss. He said it was hit or miss. We said it was hit or miss. They said it was hit or miss. It said it was hit or miss. Notice here how the T at the end of hit connects with the vowel that follows. Hitter, hitter, hit or miss, right? It's a flap T that sounds like a D. It's quite quick. Once again, I said it was hit or miss. Because the stress is on hit, you could almost barely hear that T running into the O that follows. All right, let's move on to the topic of the day. As you are probably aware, February 2nd, in addition to being Groundhog's Day, as I talked about in episode number 45, is Super Bowl number 54. The San Francisco 49ers, which is my team, will be playing the Kansas City Chiefs at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami, Florida. And this year, Demi Lovato will be singing the national anthem, The Star-Spangled Banner. Like during most performances of this song, we'll be all hanging on the edge of our seats, waiting to see how she does. Until then, let's go ahead and learn a little bit more about the Star-Spangled Banner. And maybe when you hear her performance, you'll understand what she's actually singing about. So the Star-Spangled Banner, as you can probably guess, is an old-fashioned nickname for the American flag. In fact, it was the name of the American flag when it only had 15 broad stripes and 15 bright stars. That was way back in 1814, when the song lyrics of the national anthem were penned by Francis Scott Key. As a songwriter, he was an amateur, or a newbie, or noob, as we say in American English. He had never written anything successful before. Funny enough, the tune to that song wasn't his. In Britain, a song had become popular called the Anacreontic Song. It was catchy. Legend has it that it became popular in the US, and people regularly changed its lyrics to fit whatever situation they were in. If they were out drinking with friends, they'd sing about drinking to that tune. If they had a hard day's work, perhaps they'd sing about that. Francis Scott Key found himself in just the right situation at the right time to take the tune and add some lyrics to it. The Battle of Baltimore, which was in the War of 1812, which actually lasted from 1812 to 1815. As many of you probably know, the U.S. historically had issues with Britain, from the Boston Tea Party to the bloody Revolutionary War for the independence of the United States. Our relations weren't so good. The War of 1812 was sort of an accumulation of problems between the U.S. and Britain, alongside other politicians' political agendas. And in the end, the war didn't actually bring about that much change. The U.S. added Lake Erie to the U.S. and part of Western Ontario. The British actually protected a lot of land that the U.S. tried to take within Canada, but the U.S. also burned some of their government buildings there, and in return, the Brits burned the White House, the Capitol, and other government buildings. But that's all not very important for this story. The Battle of Interest is actually called the Battle of Baltimore, and that took place in September of 1814. During the battle, the British were in boats in the ocean, and the Americans were on land. The Brits wanted to take Fort McHenry. They wanted it to fall, and the Americans wanted to protect it. Both sides had prisoners of war. Francis Scott Key, apart from being a noob at songwriting, was actually an attorney from Washington, D.C. Legend has it that he was sent out to the British boats 8 miles offshore to discuss terms of peace. When he got there, however, the predictable happened. He was told that if Americans lowered their flag at Fort McHenry, the battle would be over. All of the American prisoners would live and be freed. Francis Scott Key knew that lowering the flag would mean British victory and American defeat. He also knew that people protecting Fort McHenry would not step down. Right? They would not retreat. They would not let the Brits win. That night, the battle commenced, and he watched from the ocean as missiles and bombs were sent flying through the air at the fort. All the Americans needed to do was to keep that flag standing. So as the sky grew dark, Francis relied on the red glare and the bombs bursting in air to see if our flag was still there. This might sound a little bit familiar if you know our national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner. In fact, the lyrics were made out of a series of questions he had. Let's go through each question in the first verse of the national anthem, the part that we actually sing, and I'll simplify it in modern American English. The first line is, "Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light?" So dawn is the moment in the morning right when the sun comes up. Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light? That's like saying, hey, can you see in the morning light? Right? What so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming. To hail means to salute, to honor something, or to admire something intensely. What were they hailing? What were they saluting? The flag, of course. So what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming. Twilight is that moment when the sun goes down, right? The last gleaming is the sort of last reflection, that last bit of light that shines before the sky turns black. Let's go one time through. Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming? This is similar to saying, hey, it's morning now. Can you still see that thing, right, that flag, that we were saluting when the sun went down last night, right? Is it still there? Let's move on to the second question. Whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight or the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming? Now, this doesn't really probably sound like a question to you. Doesn't to me either. The easiest way to hear the question here is by momentarily deleting everything in the middle. Let's do that. Whose broad stripes and bright stars were so gallantly streaming? Gallantly streaming is like bravely waving. So you can imagine a flag would be gallantly streaming. It would be bravely waving in the wind. So can you guess whose broad stripes and bright stars? Once again, we're talking about the American flag. And where were they watching this gallantly streaming flag? They mentioned or the ramparts. Or is a contraction. It doesn't really make sense. It's an old-fashioned way of contracting over so that you use fewer syllables. Or is the same as over. Or the ramparts. And a rampart is a fortification. The fortification he's referring to here is Fort McHenry, right, during this Battle of Baltimore. Okay, so once again, whose broad stripes and bright stars were so gallantly streaming? When was this happening? Well, through the perilous fight. Perilous means dangerous. Through the dangerous Battle of Baltimore. All right, let's read the original one more time and then the modern update. So whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight or the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming? This is similar to saying, whose broad stripes and bright stars did we watch flying so bravely over the fortification during the dangerous battle? Once again, we're talking about the flag here, right? Whose broad stripes and bright stars, right? The American flag's broad stripes and bright stars. The last two lines of the poem are much simpler. And the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. So the light of the missiles going through the air and the bombs that went off proved that the flag was still there, right? So that's what lit up the sky and allowed people to see the flag off in the distance. And the last line, "Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave?" So here we go once again, or over, right? So over the land of the free. And it's a question. He is asking, is the flag still waving over the land of the free and the home of the brave? This is a realistic question you would be asking in the morning after a war to see if the flag is still there. That was the main goal of this entire battle, was to keep the flag standing. So legend has it that the reason the American flag was able to remain standing was because of all of the dead bodies that were stacked around the flagpole during the battle, right? These were people that guarded it from down below. After the war was over, an even bigger flag replaced the one that was bombed at Fort McHenry, right? And that stood as a sign of victory for the U.S. I hope our national anthem makes a little bit more sense, especially with the context. I only taught the first verse of the song because that's the only part that we actually sing. However, the original song comprises four verses, one which actually talks about slavery. And in recent years, some activists have tried to change the national anthem for that reason. Some believe that the national anthem should talk more about American values instead of describing our flag and one battle. Some people think that Americans should be able to sing the national anthem. Many agree that it's very, very difficult to sing just because it's very high. Some suggest changing it to America the Beautiful or My Country 'Tis of Thee. But it's been about 100 years since the discussions have started and the song still remains. So the Star Spangled Banner became our official national anthem in 1931, and it seems like it's here to stay. To end today's lesson, I'd like to play an accurate version of the national anthem for you, one that's been most highly regarded by the public and also criticized because apparently it was pre-recorded before the live version at the Super Bowl, but it's still great. Let's give it up for Whitney Houston.